So if you're listening to this, that means you've had a week's gap from episode one, part one, which means that you've had a week where you've been wondering what on earth was going to be said next in the next pieces, wondering what other nuggets of information were coming from my guest. And you've had a week where you haven't been able to apply those nuggets because you didn't know they existed or what they were, which is a little bit frustrating, really, because imagine how much more efficient, productive, or amazing you could have been. But you know there's a way around it. You know that you can pop along to Patreon, www.patreon.com/SundayLunchPM, or to Spotify, have a look at the feed, and there's a little lock. Click on the lock and it'll ask you to pay. It's the price of a coffee. That's it. A month. And you'll get everything a week early. And you won't have bits like this in it with me wittering on about becoming a patron and things like that. So, have a think. And anyway, I'll shut up now because you're probably thinking, just get on with it, Nigel. So yeah, here's the second part of the show. So, I have a number of sponsors, affiliate links, in the way that it's set up, that have kindly allowed me to share their services, really. The first one is Mike Kling, and Mike runs PM, online PM courses, and it is a great resource for getting those fundamentals of project management trained, reasonably priced, and Mike presents it in an accessible and clear manner. You can check out some of his videos on his YouTube channel and kind of give you a view of where they are. But the code for that, if you go to nigelcreaser.com/onlinepmcourses, all one word, lowercase, that'll redirect you to it. There's varying different levels that you can buy. You can buy individual courses, you can buy pathways as well, if you like. And I get a kickback off those. Mike kindly shares me that. So if you do jump on and use it, I hope you find it really useful. I think he has money back guarantees and things like that as well. So there's very limited risk on that. So jump on that, and that again is nigelcreaser.com/onlinepmcourses, and enjoy.
It's obvious from the, obviously I mentioned to you before that I follow you on LinkedIn and we're connected. I think we connected there many years ago. I can't remember under what guise it was, but I see that you've obviously got a passion for PMO. I know you've got the RS people recruit, the recruitment and side of it, but PMO passion obviously comes through on all of the things that you share, that you're regularly pushing, and your PMO flash mobs, which is probably for people who've never heard of what the PMO flash mob was. I remember the flash mob crazes from a while ago. Define a PMO flash mob. What is a PMO flash mob?
Okay, so you know the flash mob thing where people just started randomly dancing. We don't do dancing, although we've thought about it many times. So we just literally took the word because it was about getting people together quite quickly, just to meet up, just to perhaps have a drink in a pub and have some chats about PMO work that they were doing and all that kind of stuff. And that was it. It was just, you know, we're coming up to the 6th year now. So back in those early days, we literally put up a notice on social media. We're going to be in this pub from this time. Anybody using PMO that wants to come along and have a chat, come. And that's what we did. And you know, make it sound easy. It's incredibly difficult, but you start to build up a band of people that come, and then they tell other people that they know and all that kind of stuff. And so flash mob really was just the word
I kind of get it. It reflects what you're doing, isn't it? It's kind of not too structured.
But we also wanted it to have a non-corporate feel. know, so there's a lot of associations and professional bodies and things like that that have that, and that's great. But yeah, I think sometimes, you know, people are not members of things like that, so, and actually prefer something that's a bit more fun, maybe. I mean, I don't know that word fun, but you know, essentially it's an informal thing, you know.
But informality can, the formality can put people off sometimes, can't they? And whereas the informality can bring in those people.
Yes, absolutely. So it kind of, you know, it evolved. It had evolved because people were then saying, well, actually, we're hearing that this particular subject, or, you know, this theme in our business, and I haven't got a clue what it's all about. You know, does anybody else know anything about it? And what we ended up doing then is thinking, right, okay, well, luckily for me, by this point, you know, with a recruitment business, you used to get to know a lot of people. And I thought, well, actually, I know somebody who knows about that. So what about if I can entice him along to come and talk to us? And that's when we started doing a lot more things that were structured in terms of, okay, so this person will come on and present something and we will all learn about it. And that moved into, okay, well, let's stick a video in their face as well, so we can record that and let other people, wherever they are in the world, can also watch it if they want to, which is essentially what we still do today. So all the things that we do as a flash mob come from the mob, as we call them.
Yeah.
So the mob tell us, you know, this is the challenge we've got, or we see a collection. So you can come along one night, and after we've had a presentation and people are just having a drink at the bar or something, the common themes come up, which makes it quite easy for us then to say, right, okay, so the next one or the next couple might be about this. And it's lovely, you know. It's it sounds a bit wet, but PMO Flashmob people are really nice people. They, anytime there's anybody who comes along who's never been before, they are very welcoming. They'll make sure nobody stands on their own and not quite sure, and it's all very awkward. There's none of that goes on, because they've all been there themselves at one point, and are quite conscious of it. And I think, I don't know whether that's something to do with being PMO people as opposed to project managers. I don't know if that's just because of the nature of the job that we do, it's slightly different. But they're not, you know, they're a bit more...
Well, I think one of the hard parts of a project manager job is that, and I've heard someone else describe it, is you can be on your own in a room full of people as a project manager, because it is very much a quite a lonely position. I think there's, with some of the PMO roles, it's more of a collaborative kind of activity and working with people and coercing and getting to know people sort of thing than sometimes the project manager role isn't.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that, actually. Because it's funny, because we did Project Challenge, you know, the expo show for project management last week. And we had a number of people that come up to the stand. And what's really cute is when the PMO person comes up with their project manager or their program manager, and the PMO person is often really, like, outgoing and quite, you know, gushing about stuff and just talking 10 to a dozen, whereas the project and program manager just kind of, like, sits there or stands there with a silly grin on their face, as if to say, wow, I've never seen this person so animated. But, you know, it's a different person that gets attracted to the industry, I think.
Well, it's the same with a lot of industries, isn't it? You do get a 10, depending on what the roles are in all different roles. It isn't a case of different character types. And I'm teaching psychologists, talking about a psychology degree, and you'll know this yourself, isn't it? It's that you have a tendency, don't you? And some roles suit a certain tendency. Doesn't mean you can't do it if you haven't got that tendency, but it just means that people kind of gravitate to different kinds of roles, don't they?
Yeah, it'd be quite nice if you could make it a little bit clearer, actually, for people. But, you know, especially for people thinking about coming into project management, to understand, okay, yes, there's different roles within project management, but actually there's no hard and fast rules, because obviously a project manager, it depends on what kind of project you're delivering and what kind of industry you're working within. But some kind of guidelines to show people that, you know, if you're going to be a project planner, for example, quite analytical, probably quite... you know, I wouldn't say introverted, maybe quite happy to work alone and talk to a few people, but not very much. PMOs like this, project managers like this, because I think we focus a lot on the technical abilities of these roles, but not so much about the, okay, so this is what this job's going to entail in terms of relationships and how you're going to interact with other people and, you know, project manager roles having more leadership traits, for example, than people in PMO, which is quite, you know, it's quite right. You're leading a project. You're going to have a different kind of approach to getting people working in teams and all that kind of stuff. But I think it can be a bit of a minefield now, like I said, for people that are wanting to get into the profession, because we know that a lot of people fall into it. So it's kind of found you.
Yeah.
So if you flip that on its head and you've got people saying, I want to get into project management, how do you advise them on where to start? Because if they're straight out of university, you're not going to be a project manager straight away. So what's the ideal path to get there? Okay, you learn your technical skills and stuff, but you know, I've found that, you know, people in project management roles that I've really admired over the years have really spent a lot of time on their what we call soft skills, but actually the hard skills. You know what I mean? It's that side of stuff that really elevates what they are like as a project manager.
Yeah, I think the thing is, it's that that analogy that people sit there and go, well, actually, it's sort of, it's about people make projects happen. It's not the tools or the skills, the technical project management skills. If you've got the PM block of whatever certification body you've got sat by your desk, that ain't going to get the project delivered. Microsoft Project's never going to get it delivered. It's the relationships you have with your stakeholders and with your team and with anyone that you come into, those and your suppliers, all those people, that's how you make it happen, the people, not the actual tools.
Yeah. Quite difficult to do, though, isn't it, when you...
I never said it was easy.
Well, you know, this is the thing. I think a lot of people look at a project management career and see that, oh, you know, this looks like a great job. Look at the salaries and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I think some people think that it is a quite... But again, you know, the issue that I have is that from a recruitment point of view, again, is that we can be recruiting for a project manager 1 minute that's, you know, is working on a project that's low risk, not many, many people working on that project within a certain sector, and we're looking for like £25,000 a year. And then the next role could be, you know, a massive project, lot, you know, massive span of control, large budget, big risk, you know, and you're looking at 90K.
Yeah.
So it, from the outside looking in, it must look extraordinary. I mean, how can a profession be that broad, you know, in terms of the kind of people that they're looking for to work in it, and how to navigate people through that, which is essentially when I left industry and started the business. You know, the early days were that it's quite novel actually thinking about it now, but back then, 2002, we didn't have the dominance of Prince 2. Which seems really bizarre now, but you could still, you could almost categorize people in a way, well, this person's done their Prince 2, that'll be one person out of 20 who applied for a job that's done their Prince 2, and now it's going to be, it's the other way around.
Yeah.
You know, so back then, you know, and that's only 17 years in terms of how much that's changed, and from a recruitment point of view, it's got a lot harder because more and more people are hearing about project management through various different channels, not just popular TV programs, of which we won't mention, but the way, but you know,
they're not project managers.
Yeah.
Anyway, there you go. And I assume you're talking about The Apprentice.
Yes.
That's good. Thank you. Because from watching that, whilst enjoying the show, the thing that always made my skin crawl was the fact that they referred to as project managers.
Yeah, exactly. But there's
no Gantt chart in their hand.
I know. But the other thing as well, it's introduced more at schools and colleges, isn't it? That people are working on projects. You know, when they're doing a piece of work now.
Which I think I believe is a very, very good a good behaviour, because it is a case of, whilst they don't necessarily, the next step is to teach project skills, I have two daughters. Who shake their head at me when I have used sticky paper and a create a Kanban board for us to do some weekend work or anything. Maybe I'm just a bit of a geek on that point of view. But I think the tools and techniques for time management, which is what they are, for managing your own projects, breaking down a piece of work into the constituent parts, deciding which bits need to go before which other bits, it's basic skills along there with to solve any problem, never mind a big project.
Yeah, and that's project management as a life skill. And that's partially an issue, because if you're getting a lot of people wanting to get into project management because they've learned some of the life skills, like you're talking about. And but of course, industry is looking for people that have got more formal project management skills and experience and knowledge. And I think that education piece is not happening.
Yeah.
So you get a lot of disappointed people that are telling you it's not impossible, because nothing is impossible. You could get into project management. However, these are probably some of the steps you're going to have to take, and it'll be tough.
Hmm.
Yeah. But I'm guaranteed that when your daughters are older, though, they will love all of that. But actually giving them some stuff. Because, again, a number of people that I know that are working in project management have Kanban type boards in their kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, but that's how they manage their family life.
Well, we started using Trello a little bit to do some things. And you can kind of look at it, and if you don't, you just use the tools, and the tools can be useful. It's a different tool. You've got somewhere you've got to manage those tasks, haven't you? And
yeah. It
was literally, I had a lot of gardening to do, so I just thought, right, we're going to do it all as a group. Let's write them all up and stick them on the one window, and I had three windows right next to each other, and it worked perfectly.
Yeah.
Whoever had one doing stuck it in the middle. We were on our way, so it kind of. And it's all you're making progress.
Be proud. Don't call yourself a geek.
Yeah, I didn't. I do take geek as being a positive these days.
Yes.
It's good to be there. But I do. I drew the line at doing any burn down charts or anything.
Absolutely.
It was only a weekend.
That jam is what we want. But but yeah, I mean, it has been fascinating to kind of reflect a little bit on where we've been since we've started the recruitment stuff, because, you know, worked with so many businesses over that time and got a real, just like an insight into pretty much how most industries do projects.
Yeah.
And helping businesses to translate what they've got in terms of what they're looking for to the marketplace, because even now, I mean, that's why you'll always have recruitment agencies until an organization can articulate what it wants based on what the people it is that are out there in the marketplace can understand, and vice versa. And project management's tricky because it means different things to different people. I mean, you know, project management. And then you've got program management and portfolio and PMO and all of these things.
Yeah, and quite often you end up with business analysts in there as well, or architects, some of the requests from some organisations as well.
Yeah, and change managers. And yeah, there's a whole...
When you get project manager / architect, it's kind of thing, which do you want?
Welcome to our world. Yeah, and it's fascinating because we're in a position where we can ask those questions on your behalf as a project manager. You know, we obviously understand projects, and when you get some of these bizarre job advertisements or job profiles, and you can quite clearly see they're not really getting it, then you are able to ask some of those questions, and it can be difficult for them to articulate. So, you know, I don't think that's going to go away. I think, if anything, it feels like it's getting more complex. You know, now we've got people harping on about agile every 2 minutes. That's thrown into the mix as well. Oh. You know? And what is it going to be in another couple of years? You know, I went to a conference the other day, and they've got digital project management. Okay, so how's that different from some of the other things that are already out there in the marketplace? And they class themselves as a different kind of beast. So,
yeah, there's a, hopefully I'm in conversations with someone who's involved in digital project management and talking to them at some point later in the year. So
yeah.
That'll be interesting to get that take of how the difference is. Cause I sometimes struggle with that kind of whole, we're digital transformation in an IT industry. And yeah, it's fascinating. And the pace of the change of those sort of things is quite, quite rapid as well, isn't it?
Yeah, but one thing I would say in the digital project management, I think that actually that will be a gateway for a lot of millennials to the workplace and working in projects.
Yeah, because I suppose the thing is that traditionally you've either got to be someone who's been in the coding team, who's come in to do full on, you're part of that team and you've ended up being a good coder or whatever, and then you're managing some coders, and then someone says, do you want to run a project? Or you've been part of that project office set up and that you've been working alongside the project manager, deputizing for the project manager, and then the project manager goes away and then you step in and then they go, well, you can do that. Yeah, I'll have this one and do that. And that's kind of been some of the ways through. Whereas I suppose if you've got these agile scrum teams of 9 people, having multi-skilled different people in there, some people, that'll be another an easier sort of, in quotes, easier way in, or simpler way in, than where we are at the moment, because those other routes are a bit more difficult, I think, because you tend to get segregation of the and that is just my experience. You'll see a team of technical people and they will be a team and managed separately rather than a project with some technical people. When I was starting out, where you would have the project manager and the technical team are all part of the same team. Right? There's a lot more matrix stuff going on these days.
Yes. No, I totally agree. Yeah, so you can see that in terms of not only are projects getting more complex, but so is the project management structure around that.
Mm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Very
fascinating, then. I mean, it's part of the reason why ours is still around is because of our passion for project management and wanting project management to be a true profession and to, you know, to attract good people into it and retain them and you know, all of that kind of good stuff. Because one of the things that ours does each year is they have a benchmark report, which we've been doing for, I think, the 10th or 11th year. So you can see a comparison across those periods of time to actually understand, well, what, you know, what is happening. Not just necessarily at a salary and a rate level, which is that's the stuff that's in there, but to understand how, you know, how are project managers educating themselves now? What are some of their challenges? What are we doing about Agile really? And, you know, all these, you know, things that pop up each year, and we do it because we're interested. You know, we would do that and write that report just for ourselves because we are intrigued, because project management is fascinating. Fascinating. It's a great industry to be in. Very incredibly frustrating and stressful and all of those other negative words. But it is fascinating. And I love the fact that I've got the way that I see it is I'm one little corner of it about PMO stuff. Because we've been doing it for so long, not only in recruitment but with the flash mobs and the conferences and all this kind of stuff. But I've met some great people. And that's what it's all about, is if you can meet other people that are equally passionate, have some brilliant conversations and sharing stuff. And, you know, one of the things that I know you'd mentioned about, you know, what it was it that people, like podcasts that people listen to and websites that they read and things like that. And I think in a busy world that we're in, you find it incredibly difficult to have time to do these things, is that you need people to curate it for you. You need somebody that you admire, that you're friends with, that you think something quite a lot about their opinions, that they're sharing stuff with you because they've curated it. So of course I'll read this bit because you've sent it to me. And I think that's become a lot more important, especially for me. And I'm sure there's a lot of people listening, but it's like, where do you get the time for all of this? And I think that's where the network stuff comes in. About being able to share this stuff, and I'm fortunate that I've got a WhatsApp group with some close friends that are leaders in their field in PMO, and they're always sending stuff through, which is fab.
I think the thing is that social media, having that trusted group of people that you follow, you watch, you're connected with, or sharing between each other, and it's, especially with newer stuff, it's really handy to have those sounding boards of each other as well, kind of going, is it me? I'm going crazy.
Yes.
This is good, bad, indifferent, whichever, and they can validate your that you're not. You're actually, you are finding it difficult or finding it odd in a way, or finding it new as well. Just the fact that this is new, I haven't realized this is around. And I'll admit that the phrase digital project manager only came into my sort of consciousness in probably the last 12 months at most, probably.
Right.
But I know there's been lots of digital projects going on all over the place. So again, that's one that I'd sit there and go, oh, that's new. Why is that new? Why have I only just spotted this? But it's these things gradually come to the surface. The Agile was a similar sort of thing. Is that been around for donkey's years, isn't it? And it's in with that web and mobile development stuff, and that it seemed to have bubbled to the top a bit more.
Yeah, I think I'm fortunate in the job that I do, which is, you know, running different businesses. But if I see something like that and it piques my interest, I feel like I can just go to that person, just, you know, can I read more about what you're doing, or, you know, ask some questions or whatever. But because I've got a feeling that I could use it, for example, with Flashmob, if, you know, I've kind of got to, I suppose I'm curating for the PMO community. So I'm getting sort of curated to me, and then I'm also curating it on the things like PMO Flashmob. And it's invaluable because of time.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of want people to just say, just read this bit. If you want to get a grasp of that particular subject, it's at your level that you're at, just read that and you'll be fine. Right, great, fantastic. And I think the more you've been around project management, the thing that also concerns me is that you don't make time for that, because, you know, that you think, oh, I know it all. And, you know, I've been around the block quite a long time now. I'm absolutely, if I don't need to know all of this stuff, or I'm going to be disparaging about this whole, I don't know, Agile thing. Oh, it's just, you know, like normal projects. They're just calling it Agile. You know.
I've been that person saying that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and I've used, I've got myself certified, and I've been using some Agile techniques since. So it's kind of, it's that thing, isn't it, where you first hear about it and you think, I haven't got time to really understand it sometimes. Yeah. And you kind of poo-poo it, don't you?
Yeah, but we need the seasoned PM to be doing these kind of things. I am concerned about, I mean, like I said, we do this report at ours, and what we're seeing, you know, over this 10, 11 years is that the seasoned PM is dropping off, you know, and because of the, you know, retirement ages or whatever else, and the conveyor belt is not pulling in stuff at the other end, and that's, it is a concern for project management, is that, you know, what's going to happen to it, because the only thing that I can explain it as is that if you're not getting them coming up through from, say, university age right onto the conveyor belt, the other thing that a lot of people do, again, just from experience with the recruitment agencies, that we do a lot of advice for people who want to have a career shift.
Yeah.
So they've actually got experience as a, I don't know, just any kind of job before, nothing related to project management, and they're trying to make a shift. So they're not going to necessarily come in at the bottom end. They might come across mid-career. But we have no idea how many people are considering doing that mid-career. So this conveyor belt at the moment is empty in the middle.
Yeah.
So this is the kind of stuff I love talking to people about, and it's interesting. I really don't know what's going to happen to it, and it's lovely, obviously, seeing reports that come out from PMI about we're going to need X million people in various different parts of the world, and I think, wow, where are they going to come from?
Yeah, and I suppose then you got coupled with that, and it's again new things, is a lot of, and I'm sure I've seen something recently in LinkedIn about how it was PMI actually was talking about how AI is going to affect the project manager job, and I think again how it would affect the PMO role as well, and again that will change the role of those I saw a few things where some robots are coming, whatever, they'll take all the jobs or whatever, but there was one quite insightful thing, is that, brilliant, I can now concentrate, if that happens and they take away all this, I can concentrate on the most important and interesting parts of my job, dealing with the people. And I thought that was a really good point of view of how those things happen, is that you can automate it. The shortage potential may drive a greater charge towards automation, because as PMs, rather than doing people out there doing 15, 16 hour days, if they can get rid of the things that can be automated, that need to be automated and should be automated, because it's it'll change the dynamic of what the projects are doing.
Yeah, no, exactly, and that's one of the subjects that we had just last week at PMO Flashmob about the data analytics stuff, because the PMO has a lot of dross in its job. It's a lot of handle cranking that just needs to go, so you can concentrate on the stuff like you say, dealing with
And the guys can rather than creating the reports, can analyze the reports and have more time to analyze the data that's there rather than create the data that's there. That's where the value is, isn't it? Is that analyst role?
Yeah, and then we're going down the route now and looking at, okay, this is analytics stuff, and then, oh, we need to have been looking at this whole storytelling thing and insights, and it's a really interesting job. You get to so much stuff to look at. So hopefully, people listen to this and. Hopefully it'll excite you if you're not already in project management. But
Hopefully it will. Just thinking, because your role has not been the traditional project manager kind of role. But just thinking about the things that are associated around the project management, what would you say? And this is purposely. Mischievous question, really. What would you say is the biggest screw up that you've had in your career around project management, and what did you learn the most?
Ooh, I learned the most.
So what was the biggest screw up, and what did you learn from it?
The biggest screw up.
or are you perfect?
No, I think I think the biggest screw up is when I'm not handled the redundancies and stuff like that. The people side, the people management side of the job.
Yeah.
So it's not so much about a project deliverable or anything like that. Only because I probably wouldn't see that as being something that would stay in my mind as much. Because I think the things that involve people and their livelihood and, all of that, people getting upset and stuff. Plus I was really young. So I've not been around the block at all, and my interpersonal skills were probably terrible, and I just cringe at it now, and I probably remember it more than the person that ultimately was getting the notice. They're probably a great thing for them in the end, who knows, but that's the kind of thing that kind of, if I had to think back, and I wish... what I learned from that is I never want to be in that position again. So I do want to know about how to deliver bad news in a good way, if that's possible. And that's why, again, it stems back to a degree. I've never stopped reading about all this stuff that comes out, psychological research and stuff like that. And I just think, it's such a great stuff for project management, because you have got to learn how to build rapport with people and show empathy and all of that kind of stuff, which understand neuroscience and how buyers work in the work that we do, and there's lots of stuff. And I think what I didn't realize, it was only until I managed to had a really bad situation that I thought, well, actually, and I don't want that to happen again, so I need to understand more about how we'll do that differently. And you kind of look more for different theories and models and stuff that you can pick up and use. And the great thing is, I suppose, the biggest thing that you learn is actually you can learn it, but you have to practice it and not be scared to practice it.
You've got to get it wrong, haven't you, some ways, in order to get it right.
Yes, and it means practice. And I think most people, when I go on a training course or whatever, and you think, right, okay, I know about Neil, but actually, it's like a muscle, isn't it? You've got to keep using it. And I think I try and do that. I try and do that. I mean, I went on a coaching course the other day because we've now got a training company as well, all around PMO, so it carries on. But we had a coaching skills course, and there's a couple of things that I picked up there, and I'm using it all the time. You know, just like you. You know, it's you just never know where you're going to stop learning. I don't think you do, do you?
No, well, I think if you stop learning, that means you've stopped listening. So it's kind of you've got to be seeing what's going on, because we're everything changes. So by that same virtue, because things are changing, you must learn something new.
Yeah.
I go back to the fact that me and my brother used to be able to use the video recorder properly and program it to record stuff, and my mum and dad couldn't. So yeah, they didn't learn something new. That was a long time ago when we had to program them though.
Oh, wow. It's changed.
Yeah. Well, I'm just looking at the clock now. We're just clicking over the hour. So I'm thinking that I'm holding you back from the rest of your evening. There's a couple of other questions I wanted to ask, if that's all right, if you've got a little bit more time.
Yeah.
So one was a kind of a flip side of this group. What was your proudest, what would you say is your proudest achievement within the project management or within the recruitment field?
I think it's actually the proudest moments is actually being able to have the nerve to set up the businesses in the first place. Yeah. and to make them profitable. And you know, if you look at it like that, it's the biggest project that I was ever going to be faced with. And to be fair, we use all the project management skills to do that. You know, it's again, you talk to a lot of people that want to set up their own businesses in, you know, be project management consultancies or, you know, anything like that. And it's such a great skill set to have to set up a business. But it is the proudest thing, you know, immensely proud of the experiences I've had in setting up those businesses, which, you know, all of them are still going in. And yeah, it makes me incredibly busy, but yeah, really, really pleased with it all. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, sounds good. So the final one then is, what would you tell young Lindsay Scott on the first day that she started getting involved with this whole project circus? What would you say to yourself?
I'm already telling myself what's the worst that could happen. So any time an opportunity comes up where you feel like you are going down that route of imposter syndrome and trying to pass yourself off as being something that you're not, is perhaps is to have that more self-belief, I think.
Yeah.
I think in the early days I lacked in self-confidence and stuff. And, you know, I'd probably say to my younger self, that, you know, actually, you can do this because, you know, you've got a brain in your head. And you can talk and engage with people. And that's all that project management is. It's not rocket science. It is actually just working with people and working with them well and listening. And, you know, there's nothing that should exclude you here from being able to do a good job. And, you know, at that age, first day on the job, you are just a rabbit in a headlight.
I'm like that most Monday morning.
Yeah, and you know, but then something kicks in. You say, right, okay, so how do we deal with this? We do it in a classic project way, which is to break it down into smaller pieces so it feels manageable. I mean, I still say to myself now, when I've got various projects going on with the business, a new website needs doing, or, you know, we're just doing a massive conference, 400 people, you know, it's all the time, you know, and you just, yeah, that's what I tell my younger self. Let's break it down into manageable chunks, deep breaths, self-confidence, self-belief, and you will be fine. And click your heels. And then...
That's fantastic. Fantastic. Well, I've run out of... I've got a lot of questions, but I'm not going to keep you here all night. I could talk all night to you, Lindsay. It's been a great, great conversation. Is there anything... So, anything that you wanted to... chat about, cover, promote? Maybe you've got a conference coming up.
I have.
You've heard a plug or anything like that?
Yeah. Well, if you're into PMOs and you've not come across this before, please do go and find out about PMO Flash Mob. If you put that into Google, I'm pretty sure there'll only be one of us. And we also have a conference coming up in June in London, which is the biggest gathering of PMO people in the UK. And that's PMO conference. But just generally, just add to PMO Flash Mob, and it's all there. Loads of stuff, videos, reports, papers, all sorts of things for people to delve into. And if you're not necessarily into a PMO field, go and have a look at ours, people. There's stuff in there that's more career recruitment related. I did mention a report tonight. It's available for you to have a look at. And I think you'll enjoy having a look at, you know, not just about, like I said, salaries and stuff, but some of the other things that practitioners are thinking about and doing right now. And it's a good read, certainly worth half an hour of your time. And that's ours, people. Okay, that's
brilliant.
It.
I'll put all that in the show notes for people to be able to click on those links. Finally, thank you very much and have a wonderful evening.
Thank you.
Many thanks to Lindsay for an interesting and entertaining interview. If you know anyone who has an interesting take on project management, then get them to message me at sundaylunchpmpod@nigelcreaser.com. And if you have any questions, comments about the show, then use the same address or catch hold of me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, etc. with the handle Sunday Lunch PM. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do in several ways. By far the easiest and cheapest is share with your friends and colleagues. Next easiest is to craft a quick 5-star review, maybe, on whatever platform you're listening from. You could grab a free copy of When I Were a Project Manager. There's a link in the show notes, and let me have a review for that too, maybe another 5-star. Buy a copy of Project Management, the Sketches, start dipping in your pocket now. There's a link in the show too. It's a bargain on Kindle and on paperback. Or support us on Patreon, where I have patreon.com/sundaylunchpm. But more important than all of these, it would be great for you to join me again next time. And remember, hashtag Project Management is funny. Well, it's goodbye from me, Nigel Creaser, and it's goodbye from him, the Sunday Lunch PM. Goodbye.
Another great sponsor of the show, it comes in the form of Air Manual. Air Manual is a tool for documenting process, which and best practices. It's a company formed by a guy, one of my interviewees, Alexis Kingsbury. Essentially, and I kind of summarised why my view of where we see documentation, and my experience has been, people will document something, a process, they'll put it in a Visio diagram that gets loaded onto a SharePoint site or something similar. And then a bunch of that. So then once that diagram's been shared with senior management, they're happy they have a process in the business. But then the detailed procedures underneath it might be in Word documents, in just poorly kept and not linked easily and not updated. And what Air Manual does, it allows you to put in it's a tool for doing this kind of thing. You whack it in, the service in there, get in there, put in your process, your flow, and you build it down to as low a level of detail, even to the point of checklists where people can check off they've done it. So it creates that guided checklists, easy to create, easy to maintain, and all in one place. And no one's kind of rooting around to find the SharePoint, and then when you change to new SharePoint services and all that stuff, it's all there. So if you pop along to nigelcreaser.com/airmanual, there's a bit more detail there and a link there to click on to go and get. I think they offer a trial and things like that. So it's something that I think can easily reduce the amount of errors, rework, etc. within our organisation. So take a look. So this is my final wrap up. Every week you're going to hear this, you're going to get bored of it, but you can always click next podcast if so. If you have enjoyed it, if you listen to this podcast to the end of this show and you think that was great, I'd love to be able to help Nige out. There are loads of ways you can do it. The first and obvious way is to share the podcast, send it out to people. If you know colleagues and friends who'd benefit from it, you think they'd enjoy it, just send them the link. Grab one of the links, send them to www.nigelcreaser.com/podcasts. That's www.nigelcreaser.com/podcasts. And that will push them over to a Linktree link, and it's got all of the different ways they can consume the podcast. If you are feeling generous and have a big bag of cash, you could grab a copy of one of my books. Obviously, they're available in all the usual places, and print and digital. Again, jump on the website, www.nigelcreaser.com/shop, and that will give you a list of all the different ways that you can contribute and grab copies of the book. Also got links to all my guests' books on there as well, where I get a little bit of a kickback from them. If you are of a sporting mind, I have a number through doing some of my judo and running antics. I've managed to secure a few affiliate links and affiliates there as well. So in there, somewhere in the sponsors page, there's links to those as well. So clicking onto those and grabbing if you're looking to get super fit, then that would be fabulous as well. And I get a little kickback from those. I have a Patreon account. It's patreon.com/sundaylunchpm. So again, you can ping something in there, buy me a coffee or whatever. And finally, obviously the most important is coming back, listen again, because the more of you that come back, the more visibility I get, because there's more times that it's downloaded and all the SEO works and things like that. So yeah, that's it. So if you can help me out, I would be much appreciated. If you can't, don't worry about it. Thank you very much. Cheers now. Bye. My latest, the latest affiliate that I've got on the show now is Riverside. I use Riverside to do my interviews, Riverside FM. it kind of offers you a whole, if you like, micro studio management producer tooling, and goes beyond that. Has a really good free layer, and I've been using it for a while now. I find it really good. When I've had issues, even though I'm not on one of the higher paid levels, the support has been quick, responsive, and of high quality, and people keen to help me. The organisation seems really good. The product seems really intuitive. And quality is really good as well. And it's a clever way of doing it is when you're recording through your browsers, so you've not got loads of desktop resources being used compared to some other products that I've used. And what they also do is they do they stream a lower quality version of it up onto as you're doing the interview, so you're not burning bandwidth while you're doing the interview and potentially impacting on the quality of the conversation. And then at the end, it uploads it, the higher quality from your browser. I mean, it's just a really good way of doing it. So if you are thinking of doing a podcast, know someone's doing a podcast, I would recommend using this tool. I found it really good. Best of the tools that I've tried using to date. And you can get that at nigelcreaser.com/riverside, and that will redirect you to my kickback page on their site, and there I will get a little kickback from them. So take a look. Thanks. Well, it's goodbye from me, Nigel Creaser, and it's goodbye from him, the Sunday Lunch PM. Goodbye.